Now we have a workout coming for our people who do the transcription. Because Andy here is also from Britain. Well, he is from Britain, I just lived there. And he's working on the F12 developer tools, the things that all of you have been waiting for to debug all the things. If people just stopped making mistakes, it would be so much easier, wouldn't it?
It would. Yeah. It would put me out of business, though. So.
Okay.
Keep writing bad code.
So after you saw what Chakrakor can do, now you can see how you can debug in Edge compared to the browser who shall not be named. And with that, Andy, take it away.
All right, well, let's see if I can get this projection thing working first.
Can you debug that?
No. Okay. Does that resolution look okay? Let's just shrink it down. All right, we'll get started. Okay, so it's time to talk about tools. I'm excited. As a developer, tools are very near and dear to me, so I'm really excited to share with you the things we've been working on, both in the browser tools, as well as things just outside the browser. So as a bit of introduction, I'm Andy Stirland. I'm the PM for the tools you see in Edge, as well as the tools you might use in Visual Studio, if you're debugging or building a UWP app that's using JavaScript. I like to think it is my job to give you guys a torch, or a flashlight, if you will, that lets you peer into the dark recesses of the browser, that runtime, so you get a bit of insight, a bit of, how should we say, insight into how your application is working, a bit of truth out of it. And so today, I'm really excited to share some of those new things we've been working on, so you get to see even more of the inside of the black box inside the web browser. In this talk, I'll be looking at three areas. DOM profiling, which is a way or a feature in the tools where you can see the impact of your code, your user code, your JavaScript has on the browser. We'll also be looking at accessibility testing, some of the work inside the browser and in other features we've done to make it easier for you to test for accessibility of your sites. And lastly, we'll also be talking about how some new tools can integrate with Edge to make an easier workflow for yourself. So firstly, DOM profiling. So if you imagine your application as a pie chart, as I've liked it on here, and think of the time it spends in different parts of the browser, be it time in the network stack, time in rendering or layout, or even your own JavaScript code. Now, if you're going to improve the performance of your application, and in any given scenario, you'll probably, if you're anything like me and you have anything that looks like a pie chart or a pie, you're going to find that biggest slice of pie and go after that, right? That's the thing you want to do. There's no point optimizing the thing that's 5% of the time when it's the thing that's 40% of the time is just sitting there and you're not touching it. So part of the challenge for you as a developer is to find those big chunks of time and then drill down and try to find out where best to spend your time to optimize. And each subsystem in the browser has their own tools for this. So take the network. If you have a very network-heavy, network-dependent application, you might use the network tool to see where time is spent downloading requests, to see how much time was spent stalled or paused, waiting for requests to complete, et cetera. And there's a tool for this in the browser and indeed out of the browser. And tools like Fiddler. If you took something like layout, for example, there's a different tool. If your problem was layout, use the visual profiler. Take a trace. And then you can get like per element costs and per sub-millisecond costs for laying out of buttons and texts. So again, you can drill down, you can peel back the onion, and you can look a bit deeper into your application. So when it comes to JavaScript, of course, there's a tool for that as well, the profiler. So if we take a quick look at a really simple application here, I've just got this page, and this page, all it does is draw colorful buttons, colorful divs, colorful squares. And the point here is it's, of course, interacting with a DOM. It's adding new nodes to the DOM, and it's positioning them. And so if you go look at a trace of some of this code, what you'd see today is something like this. So I think you might all have seen this sort of profile trace. What we've got is a graph, of course, or a tree, of all the time spent in various functions. From the root function here, which in this case is the event handler, and that has essentially every single thing is called off there. So it has an inclusive time of 100%. So what that means, as a quick reminder, inclusive time is the time spent just in yourself and all the people you call. So in this case, there's one root function, calls hundreds of other things, so it's 100%. But the time spent just inside that single function, the exclusive time, in this case, is like less than a tenth or around a tenth of a percent. So it's not the place you want to optimize. What you want to go find is the thing with the big exclusive time, that big piece of pie that you can now drill down and go look and optimize. So today, what you'd see with an application like I just showed you is you'd see something like this, where I was using jQuery, and you can see now that I've set a function in jQuery called style. And that's kind of the end of the story. It had some logic. It interacted with a DOM. but I didn't see what happened beyond that. So today, with DOM profiling, we've got peeled back the onion one more layer, and what you can now see is actual time spent in functions calling into the DOM. So for example, if you did HTML, or in this case, I was setting top, background color, and left, you can see the cost in each of those. So say you had a function today which was doing some logic to update an area of your page or something like that, you know, manipulating the DOM and things. The cost of that function has been rolled up, but it's hard for you to optimize because you don't know if it was the inner HTML was slow or if it was some logic on your behalf. So now you can peer into that and make choices around, like, ooh, do I use inner HTML? Do I create a document fragment and append it into the DOM? Because the tools are all about giving you information so you can make an informed choice. So you as a developer can profile, get information, experiment, and figure out what's best for your scenario and best for your use cases. So that was DOM profiling. The next thing I'm going to talk about is tools for accessibility testing. So accessibility is obviously a huge range, from everything from design, working with your partners and stuff to come up with accessible designs, working with, you know, other people to build and implement and ship accessible sites. And so that's a big topic. I'm just going to focus more on the testing side, what you as a developer and the tools you as a developer can use to test and potentially verify the accessibility of your site. And so one of the challenges of accessibility testing is it's super important. It's really important for you to make sure your experiences are accessible to everyone, but it's also not easy. Take many things you do today, such as, you know, building a nice landing page or even some new function. It's easy to get feedback. You know, if you work with other people like designers or your boss or whoever, it's super easy for them to give you feedback on a design, on a graphical and like how things look visually. It's easy for them to check the functionality. Does it work as you expect? Even does it perform? But asking if something's accessible is really hard. And the truth of it is, you really need to work with people who regularly use things like screen readers to get feedback. Because of course, the ultimate proof in the pudding is making sure that your end users can use your site, you know, in the scenarios you want with alternative methods of using a computer. So it's a really hard problem. Because as a developer, you're probably not shown that side of the world very often. You know, you regularly see the image on the screen, you regularly interact with it, but you've probably not seen your site through different eyes, through different tools. So we've got a bunch of tools that we're building in Edge that help make it easier for you to test. They're not a replacement for real user testing, but they're a great place to get started. So they're tools like Page Analyzer, which is an extension to Edge, which will help find some low-hanging fruit, some rules, run some rules against your site, give you some instant feedback, as well as tools to improve manual testing. Because much like with, you know, functional or visual testing, a lot of accessibility testing is going to be manual for you. And lastly, we also want to expose new information, shine more light into different parts of the browser in the dev tools and show things like the accessibility tree. So Page Analyzer, which we'll do a quick demo of right now, just let me switch, is an extension to Edge. Oh, I just did the demo after this. So there's an extension to Edge, and it's a rule checker. So one of the things it does is it runs a bunch of rules against your running page. And a set of those rules are built by a company called DQ. They have an accessibility engine. It runs in JavaScript. There's extensions out there for all the browsers. And what it does is look for a bunch of, how should we say, common pitfalls, common mistakes that are pretty easy to make and pretty easy to spot. And so we ship this inside Page Analyzer. And so if I switch to the demo, and go to the machine, which is this one. So what you can see, I've got a page set up here. Let's go full screen. And then realize it's all the way over there, so let's shrink that. OK, so I promoted this extension so it runs in the top bar here. It's just called Page Analyzer. Open it by clicking on it. Now we wait patiently. Or we go to my backup. Ta-da. OK, so here's one I ran earlier. So what you can see is Page Analyzer, what it does is it lists out all the tabs you have open, all the pages, and you choose to run a bunch of rules against it. So Page Analyzer includes rules for web standards, like using CSS features and fallbacks and stuff. But the thing we're talking about is accessibility. So this page has a pretty common mistake. It's missing an alt attribute on an image. So that image won't be read out by a screen reader. It'll be completely missed. And so what Page Analyzer has done is run those ACT rules against it and come up with, hey, here's something for you to look at. So the interesting thing about this tool, and it's pretty much all the tools of this vein, is running rules against your page. It's giving you things to look at. It's not saying this is a definite problem you need to absolutely fix. It's up to you as a developer to make the right choice for your scenario and decide what you need to do about this. And especially, it's not true, and I don't think there's any tool anywhere out here that will enable you to run the tool, get a complete list, and then go, oh, okay, I've made the list, I've fixed all the errors I saw, and so thus I'm done. That's not true. There is no tool like this Page Analyzer, and other tools aren't like that. They're great places to get started. They do a good job of catching low-hanging fruit, but they don't catch everything. It's still, of course, a lot more testing for you to be done. And a part of that, of course, should be real user testing. Should be working with people who use screen readers on a regular basis. People who use the screen reader on a regular basis. Because user testing, of course, is a great way to get really valuable feedback. But of course, that's not always possible for you, because you might not have such a capability in your organization or one that you can get hold of. So at the very least, a good place to start is using a screen reader. Like, hands up, how many people have seen their web page or OS used via screen readers? Okay, a few people. So I do say, don't try it right now, especially if you've not got your computer muted, but do go home and try using a screen reader and just see how different the experience is. It's very different from what you're doing right now. And so it's a great thing for you to try and get experience with. But if you're like me, and as a developer, you're using a screen reader, it's overwhelming. So if you're not familiar, screen readers obviously read out the text that's displayed on the page. They're designed to read it out as you go through different applications, like as you alt tab or whatever else. So there's a lot of text that's read out loud. And if you're like me and you like to have your mute button turned on your computer because you don't like sound, then this is really overwhelming. And it's also confusing because as you're switching between, say, your page with a screen reader and the developer tools will start reading out the thing that's displayed in the developer tools. They'll start reading out the JavaScript. They'll start reading out that DOM tree that you're looking at from select element, which makes it a really tricky experience. So one of the things we've done in Windows is improve the built-in screen reader called Narrator and add a developer mode to it. And what that developer mode does is help focus the screen reader just on your particular application. So let's Alt-Tab to it. Doo-doo-doo. Okay, and so the way you turn on Narrator is if you go to the Start menu and search for Narrator, you'll find it, and there's also Windows N, I think, Windows Enter. And then once you've got Narrator open, okay, so you can see, I've not got the audio wired up now, but you can see this little blue rectangle. That's indicating where Narrator's current focus is. So if I go back to Narrator and enable developer mode, which is caps lock shift and F12, let's just try that again. Caps lock shift. Okay, there we go. So the first thing it's done, as you've noticed, is obviously it's blacked out the application that it's talking to. So this is important because if you're anything like me, the first thing you do when you turn on a screen reader is you use the mouse to navigate your page. You use the mouse to click on regions, to click on things. Of course, if you're using a screen reader, using the mouse is a bit ridiculous. You're not going to use that. You're going to use the keyboard to navigate. But it's so ingrained, you're just going to use the mouse to move around. So instead, it's really interesting seeing your site in this way, where it's just text. The great thing about Narrator Dev Mode is it's not reading out this text, it's displaying it. So it's much easier for you to read, but obviously if this was in normal Narrator mode, it'd read it aloud. So here you can start interacting with your page, and you can tab around, and you can start to see what's possible, what you can get access to. And so this particular page has an interesting problem, wherein it has a div, but that div has an on-click handler that does something. So if I turn off Narrator, I can show you that. But the downside of this is, the downside of this particular thing is that that div doesn't appear. So when I tab around, I don't see it. It doesn't get focused. At no point does that blue rectangle hover over that button. Let's just exit this. Because, of course, it's not marked to be accessible. It's not marked with an ARIA role and stuff like that. And so that brings us to the next set of tools which we're going to look at, which are over in the browser. So quick recap, Narrator Dev Mode, access from Caps Lock, Shift, and F12. Again, it's not a true replacement for a screen reader, because, of course, screen readers, they don't do the black window thing, and they work across a machine. And it's also worth noting there's several screen readers even on Windows, and screen readers themselves behave differently. And, of course, screen readers, many of them can be customized by their users. Things like keyboard shortcuts can be customized. And some screen readers even have, per-page logic. But it's a great thing. It's much more accessible to you than a full-blown screen reader. But what do you do when you found an issue in a screen reader? So you've gone to your page, and you've tabbed around in the screen reader, and you've not found an element. So the first thing that's probably worth talking about is an interesting thing about how the page is built and how the DOM is rendered. So you're all probably familiar with two different views of the tree, two different views of some internal structures the browser has. So take your application, and imagine you've got HTML, CSS, JavaScript happening and executing. And then, of course, the browser platform's gone, built up an internal data structure for that. And from that, there's a bunch of views into the data. One of the views you're very familiar with is the DOM. It's the document.body, document, all those APIs you use thousands of times. That's the same thing as that when you load up the tools, you interact with the console, or you look in the DOM Explorer, that's the same thing. So you're very familiar with that, seen that a lot. The render tree, slightly different tree, but very closely related to that tree. So the render tree might have information that's pertinent only to drawing. It's all about getting colors, bitmaps to the screen, you know, producing an image, and also translating input from that. So take an example of a pseudo element, like before or after. That doesn't exist in the DOM tree. It's not enumerable. But it does obviously exist in the render tree, because you see it. You can see, like, you know, your bolded up first letter and stuff like that. So those two trees are different. But those trees you've seen all the time. You've interacted with those almost every single day you've built or worked on a web page. Another tree exists that's exposed for the purpose of other applications, called an accessibility tree. And this tree is all about programmatic access for other applications to drive, you know, your web page or website. And, you know, it's typically used, firstly, by automation frameworks that you want to drive an application, but also mostly by screen readers. So screen readers, of course, don't care for an image and stuff like that. They want to get text. They want to know what controls are on a page. They want to enumerate those controls. And they, of course, want to invoke those controls and figure out, like, is this button like a toggle button, or is it just a regular button that I send a command into? And then, of course, like, screen readers and other alternative things, even like Braille readers and stuff, provide different mechanisms for users to then trigger those things. So this is like kind of a third tree. And it's essentially hidden to you unless you've seen it through like a screen reader or some automation frameworks. So it's kind of like mysterious. This other thing that's not really there, but it is. And unlike those, that render tree and the DOM tree, it's probably the most different because, of course, it's all about driving programmatic access. So in the browser tools, what we've gone and done is if I just switch to the right machine, which isn't here, so we just go Hyper-V, blah, blah, blah. And it's still running, which is a good thing. Full screen. Password. If only this had face recognition. All right. Okay, so we've got this same page again, and this page has two divs, which have, you know, they've just got click regions, they've got a click handler, and they're doing stuff. You've probably got similar things in your application with icons or not. And so the first thing we're going to do is look at the accessibility tree. So to do that, there's this little button here. And let me just zoom in the tools so you can press Control Plus to zoom in the tools. So this accessibility tree, so this is like a side-by-side tree. So as I select elements here, as you would normally, you can also see they're selected here in this tree. And so you can already see there's a big divergence between the DOM tree that you know and love and the accessibility tree. The accessibility tree in this case is much smaller. And that's because, of course, there's no need for things like span and other things that are doing positioning and whatnot. This is all about providing that data to things like screen readers. And so you can see already there's a big difference. And also there's this tab in the F12 tools called accessibility, rather cunningly named, that shows all the properties that relate to accessibility. So everything from the implementation of the platform. So here you can see an interesting thing that has keyboard focus. It's false. So this element, you know, can't be focused in the keyboard. So an easy way to change that is to do something like add attribute and add a tab index for it. So we're just going to do equals 1. And now, of course, the nice thing over here is you tab around, you know, it'll have a focusable region. And of course, if we, oops, we're going to click back on it, should go to has keyboard focus true. Got the right element. Anyway, so, and the other thing you'll see here is that on this, the other thing that's important, of course, is to make sure that your elements are annotated correctly. So in this case, I'm using a div as essentially a control, like an action is going to happen. So I need to expose that to the screen reader. So one way of doing that is using an aria role. So here you can see the second div has a role of type button, which means You know, you can see here in the tree view that it's listed as a button. And that, of course, will be in, you know, picked up by a screen reader, so that it will notify the user that they can send in an action to this particular page. And there's a bunch of different roles, you know, obviously from like buttons, toggles, and landing, headings and landmarks and stuff. So this is all reflected in this tree view. So what this tool is giving you is an insight into how the browser took your application and decided that it should be exposed, thanks to input from you, as the developer. So, and here you can really start to drill down and figure out issues. Okay, so that covers some of the tooling we have for accessibility. So as you've seen, there's a bunch of three different tools. Page Analyzer, which is a great tool to get started to find some common errors and things like that. Narrator Dev Mode, which is a much more easy way for you to manually test your site using your screen reader. And lastly, the accessibility tools in the dev tools to give you that insight, to see that accessibility tree, to see how your application is being interpreted. And it's really important at the end of the day for you as developers to provide that annotation, provide those ARIA annotations so that the application can be interpreted correctly. Because there's no magic in the platform that will make your site accessible. Ultimately, the buck kind of stops with the person shipping the code to make sure the site is accessible and that information is provided. Okay, so last section, I'm going to talk a bit about tooling beyond the browser. Like, talking about tools as you know and love, like your editor, for example, and how that can integrate with the browser to make your workflow slightly easier. So a bit of a warning, a bit of a caveat here. This is a new demo, so dragons be here. So fingers crossed I sacrificed enough to the demo gods. So you saw this morning from Greg about interoperability for the web platform, how over time all those APIs have converged across all the major browsers. You know, so that you as a developer have this huge benefit of write once, run nearly everywhere, but it's been like absolutely massive in terms of your productivity and making it easier for you as a developer to build applications. As much as there is a set of APIs that's exposed to your application and the things you use, there's also APIs that are exposed to tools that allow tools like the tools you see in the browser to profile, to debug, to inspect your application. And unfortunately, there's no standard for those. There's no real even interoperability in many regards. Each of the browser vendors and each browser has a very different approach to how they, you know, expose debugging and diagnostic information, which is often tied to the platform they sit on top of. But what we'd like to do on the tools is provide adapters or things out of band that enable Edge to be exposed using the most common protocol, or the most commonly used today, which is the Chrome Remote Debug Protocol. And that's the protocol Chrome uses to attach to like your Android device or something else. It's based on WebSockets and JSON RPC. And it's great because there's a bunch of tools out there in the ecosystem that use this protocol. And we want to make it easier for both ourselves and others as tool vendors to build experiences based on top of that. So what we're going to do is ship on GitHub a little EXE called the Edge Diagnostic Adapter, which will take all the API set from Edge, expose it out, and enable tools that use the Chrome Remote Debug Protocol to attach to it. So the first example of a tool we're going to look at is something in Sublime. So if you've Sublime, there's a plugin over on Package Control or extension that allows you to debug Chrome. So you can set breakpoints, inspect, and stuff. Because, you know, one of the experiences that, you know, many people have enjoyed for a long time is the ability to use your debugger, use your editor, where you have your files open, where you have your code set up, to set a breakpoint and hit it. It's a really simple thing, but it simplifies your workflow as a developer a lot. Like today, for example, you could be editing in Sublime, you then push your change, you'll have a watch to refresh your browser. You then go look at the file you were just editing or find it in the tools, set a breakpoint and rerun your scenario. Well, you can imagine it'd be much easier just to set a breakpoint in the code in the first place. And this is also an interesting experience because this, of course, is all based in Sublime, so it's all ASCII art, because the Sublime's extension model is based upon editor views, essentially. So what we've got here is Sublime. So we're going to do Control-Shift-R, and we're going to start debugging. Oops. We toggled the breakpoint, which we also needed to do, but we're going to start debugging. And it gives us a list. So what that does is it gives us a list of the pages that are currently running. So I have two pages running. One is this game, which I want to debug. This one here, which is, I'm sure you're all familiar with it. It's the 2048 game. I just cloned it from GitHub. But this could be your application. It could be anything. And so we just attach to that particular page. And there we go. And then we make sure our breakpoint is toggled. Again, so this is, you know, using Sublime. There's a bunch of commands driven through the superbar. Oops, no, that was reload page. And what we've got, once we set a breakpoint, is we should have set a breakpoint on this button here over in new game, but we didn't, so I'm just gonna try that again. Toggle breakpoint. Oh, now with caps lock. Okay. One more time. I think I untoggled it. Toggle breakpoint. This is why I said drag. Did that work? Ah, okay. So this is the point where we move on to VS Code. So let's close that down. Moving on to a different debugger. So VS Code, like you saw from Brian earlier today, has an idea that you can have an integrated debugging experience in your IDE. So I can do something like set a breakpoint here on the .restart function, and then you can configure to launch different targets. So what we've got here is this launch JSON, which normally in VS Code you'd use to set like launch node or launch whatever sort of backend or even frontend you want. And there's a debugger for Chrome that this is based upon. And here you just say type edge. And so with an extension to VS Code, this isn't built into VS Code, it's an extension we're about to ship. You go, make sure the thing is running, check. And then from the debug menu, we go attach to edge. And this time, fingers crossed. Okay. Hey. So as you can see, we've broken inside Edge, VS Code, and now you can just step like you expect. And there's all these same features you'd expect from a debugger. You can inspect variables, you can add watches, you can set breakpoints. So it's just using the full IDE against Edge, just as you would for other targets of VS Code, such as Node and indeed Chrome. Okay. So that's VS Code debugging Edge. And so the point of this really is to expose a fairly consistent or standard set of APIs that tools can consume. So as tools get built that target browsers, it's easier for tool vendors to make it so that it's easy to reach Edge, and so it's easy for you as a developer to include Edge in your workflow. Okay, so to wrap this up, we've kind of looked at three different areas. One was DOM profiling, which is showing you insights into how your code makes calls into the DOM and the cost of those calls, so you can better choose where and when to optimize. We looked at accessibility tooling, specifically around Page Analyzer, the Rule Checker, as well as Narrator Dev Modes, and of course the accessibility tree in F12, which shows all the backing information that is provided to screen readers. And then lastly, we looked a bit about a standard API that's exposed using WebSockets and JSON RPC that makes Edge reachable by a bunch of different tools. So that's about it, but I would like to say, do feel free to reach out to us on Twitter. You can find us at Edge Dev Tools and myself at Andy Stirland. We're always happy to answer any questions you might have about the tools or any suggestions you might have and features you'd like to see. So with that, thank you very much.